It is the battle of the sexes representing the men. His name is Ted. He lives in Burbank. He works in entertainment marketing. Enjoys watching movie trailers. What's up, Teddy?
Hey,
it's
Ted.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Representing the ladies, her name is Michelle. She's from Corona. She's a stay-at-home mom and enjoys crafting and baking. Let's hear from Michelle.
What's up, Michelle?
Good morning. Good morning.
All right, here's how it works, Michelle. I'm going to ask you stereotypical male questions. Ted, Jill's going to ask you stereotypical female questions. Best out of three wins. If we are still tied at the end of regulation, we go to a not-so-tough tiebreaker question. Let us start with the ladies. Michelle, last night, Peter Dinklage won the Best Supporting Actor in a Drama Emmy for his work on what TV show?
Game of Thrones.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ted, before he won an Emmy last night for American Crime Story, Darren Criss sang on what Fox TV show?
So you think you can sing?
Oh. I wish that was a show.
Great guess.
No, he was on Glee.
Dude, that's amazing. So, you think you can sing, huh? Current score, 1-0, ladies. Here's your question, Michelle. What kind of candy bar does Chunk share with Sloth in the movie Goonies?
Nessie's Crunch.
No, yeah. It's a Baby Ruth.
Baby Ruth?
Can't you hear him saying it?
Mm-hmm.
Ted, what kind of candy does Elliot share with E.T. in the movie E.T.?
Reese's Pieces.
Yeah.
That's right.
Guys on the board, it's 1-1. Here we go, Michelle. Before returning home to Los Angeles, the Rams were located in what city?
San Diego.
Oh, St. Louis.
You're thinking of the Chargers.
Yes. Come on, fellas.
Oh, Ted, where in your house would you find Garnier Fructis products?
Garnier Fructis would be hair products for the bathroom shower.
He did it.
You're right.
Oh. Yay! Battle of Sexes Championship Certificate. Download as a PDF printed hanging on your wall with pride, brother.
Thank you.
Then go check out this lady. Pink is amazing. She's at the Forum April 19th. You got tickets.
That's so awesome. Thank you.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Mr. Willett.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Yeah, it's episode 40. I'm doing well.
The big 40.
Yeah, man, it's like, you know, when I turned 40 on my birthday or something. Like, you're looking back, you're like, where did the time go? So how's the week been?
Good week this week. Far less eventful as last week. But yeah, how about you? What did you have going on this week?
Week was cool. But, before we get into that, I'm going to need time tonight.
Uh-oh, for your beer?
Yeah, I have from Mission Brewery in Santa... Where the heck is it from? Mission Brewery in San Diego. I have a shipwrecked double IPA, 9.25 ABV.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see this? In a 32 ounce can. So the reason why I want to jump into the beer so quickly, I'm going to need time to suck this one down.
So you make it a rule that you have to be finished by the end of the show?
Oh, I'll be shipwrecked. Yeah. Apparently, 1913, I don't know how that works with Prohibition and everything, and then maybe they like put it on hiatus and then came back.
Uh-huh.
But it's 32 ounces. It's a quart, or I guess, yeah, 32 fluid ounces. I mean, I don't know how I'm going to feel at the end of this. Probably shipwrecked, like I said. But yeah, it's a double IPA. It says here, a style of beer. Man, it's so small, I can't even read it. Urously born on the foggy shores of Father Junipero, Sierra's first founding mission. I don't know what the hell I'm reading.
And you haven't even had anything to drink yet tonight, so.
I'm going to crack this open and pour it. I'm going to be drinking it out of a dogfish head. I wouldn't call it a tulip glass, but it's a dogfish head, like IPA glass.
Cool.
And I'm sure people have heard of dogfish. Head. I don't know if anybody's heard of Mission Brewery, but I saw it in the store and
awesome. I have heard of it.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Hang on.
Let's hear it.
Okay. I'm in for the long haul now. It's open. What are you drinking tonight?
So tonight I went with, I was scaling it back a little bit. I've had so many of these 22s. I went with just a pint this week. I'm going with Strand Brewing Company. It's a Los Angeles Brewing Company out of Torrance.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And we actually over a year ago, we ran into one of the owners of Strand Brewery, and he gave me his business card with like free tasting on the back for a party of four. So next time you're down in town, we should try to figure out how to get down to Strand.
Oh, definitely. We'll go and we'll bring back some beers and stuff, and then we'll do like a little review or whatever. So
exactly. So I went into my Burbank Whole Foods today, and I was like, I walked up because I wanted to drink some Lord Hobo on the air.
More Lord Hobo.
I love that Lord Hobo. And I was like, give me a little sample. And they gave me a sample, and I was drinking that, and I said, can I buy a growler? Is there a way, do you guys do growlers yet? And they don't do any growlers, but I suggested that they should do like filling growlers and stuff, because it would be awesome. It'd be an awesome business, but they didn't do that. So I just got this little pint for, it's called 24th Street Pale Ale, Our Way from Grain to Grass. Wow, that's not
nice. And how big is that bottle, you said?
It's just a pint.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I'm drinking it out of a pint glass from some swag we got one year from 789, one of our production companies.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, so the Shipwrecked IPA, double IPA, it is bitter.
Uh-huh.
Like in the IPA the sense. In the IPA sense, it's bitter. It's not one of those florally fruity ones. It's more like the grassier, like piney, almost like a pine cone. It's like chewing on a pine cone.
I love that. Yeah. Like I was saying, that Figaro Mountain has one of the best pine IPAs I had.
Yeah, it's not one of those like really citrusy type of hop. It's more of like the pine.
Like sap.
Yeah, like you're chewing on bark or something. You know, it's like that good. You know, I mean, like I don't really chew on bark often, but if I did, it would taste like this. And it's really good.
Yeah.
So yeah, you taste it and like just hits you, and it has like that bitter right away, and then all of a sudden you taste like that foresty, like I'm camping.
Oh, I love it.
Flavor. Yeah. So how's yours taste?
Mine tastes good. Mine's really clean, crisp. It's a good rest from these double IPAs. Like the IPAs I've been drinking, I had the last of the Hemper that was over at Frank's last night.
Oh, nice.
And when I opened that, Scott from next door was like, oh my God, what are you doing in there? Like he caught it from across the dining room. It was fun.
Didn't I tell you, man? Like it's so different.
But after doing all these Lord Hobos and all that other stuff, this is just a nice, clean, crisp.
Mellow. It's mellow.
Mellow IPA. It's not even a mellow. It's just a pale ale. So it has that IPA, but it's not hitting you over the head. So this is probably like the lightest beer that I can enjoy.
Right. Perfect. About yeah, now. Perfect.
Oh, and I did do one thing this week. I just actually literally just came from the gym.
Okay.
I was with Ryan over at Rise Fitness and Performance, and I started a 6-week program.
And you got what? A 6 to 8 week training program here? A real tough one, which is perfect for me. I'm going to walk out of here a lean, mean fighting machine.
So I was like, oh no, can I drink beer? And he said, no, you can't drink beer. And I was like, well, how about once a night, just on Friday nights, just for the podcast? He's like, all right, but make sure it's a good beer and you run extra.
So it's kind of like John Candy in Stripes. He needed to lose weight. So he found this like 8-week weight loss program.
Oh, got it. I haven't put that much back on, but I have put a couple pounds back on. So I want to kick it out while I still can.
There you go. Yeah. So this week, you know, I ride my bike every day to work and stuff, you know, which is no secret to the regular listener.
Uh-huh.
So I'm walking around campus. It's lunchtime, or, you know, I'm like between classes and teachers are between classes, and we're walking around and people are seeing me and they're like, I saw you the other morning. Someone else says, I was driving in. I saw you riding to work the other morning. And pretty much it's my son, Mikey, who's like famous now of among the teachers, because as we go to work, we're flying down the hill and he's got like his Batman cape, like just out there, like flying behind us. And everybody just loves his cape. So like he wears a cape. It doesn't matter what his clothes. So he's not wearing like, you know, the Batman outfit. He's wearing a Batman cape and a utility belt.
Awesome.
Like as we, and I'm like, we should all be able to wear capes, right?
It does. Is it a tearaway? Does it, is it a safety cape?
Yeah, it's like a Velcro or something.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm very worried about the capes around necks and stuff.
Oh yeah. No, this thing kind of, like, let's put it this way. It falls off like with a gust of the wind. You know what I mean? But no, like, so all these teachers are like, I see you with your son riding and oh, the cape, it's great, you know, and it's just hilarious. So that was probably my highlight of the week, you know, and any low lights? Nah, I don't have low lights.
Nah.
Not this week anyway. Yeah, we try to keep those to a minimum.
Yeah. So yeah, I haven't been watching a lot of stuff. I watched a lot of Cheers in the background at work, just having it playing in the background. That was a lot of fun.
Cheers, like the old 80s show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm like in a good place withdrawal, so I just want to hear Ted Danson's voice. So
oh yeah, I got you.
That's just what I've been doing.
Yeah, before we get into what we're watching for the week, we do have a few corrections from last week that I want to touch on.
Oh please.
So the barley wine I was drinking, I said it was an Ucaba, Ucaba.
Yeah, is that not right?
Well, apparently the squiggly line in front of the U is an S. So somehow I missed it, but you know, it's not fully my fault, because the S was written in like one of those like legalese sort of like legal brief type of S's, you know, where it's like that squiggly with the lines going through it and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, it didn't look like an S, but apparently like compared to the other letters, it looked like just a squiggly lines, but apparently it's an S. So it's a Sucaba. I don't know. Sucaba, I guess. Anyway, so I wanted to say it was a 2018 Firestone Walker Sucaba, just for those listening before they, you know, like chastise me for it. The other thing was in Overlord, I said they were flying C-17s in the opening scene, which, you know, is what the airborne jumped into Normandy in, and those were actually C-47s. So C-17 is a modern day cargo plane that is, I mean, I guess airborne can jump out of it, or I don't know, maybe, but
they can jump out of anything, right?
I suppose so. But a C-17, hey,
how about okay, yeah,
no, I would say a C-17 is like this massive, like, I think it's called like the Galaxy. I'm not even gonna go there because I don't need to make a correction next week.
Yeah. Did you catch my mistake? You probably didn't catch my mistake.
Which one? No, I'm just kidding.
Numerically, my mistake was the largest. I called the
A million times to die in the West instead of a thousand ways. A million ways to die in the West. Yeah, right. I did catch that. Yeah.
So there you go. We're drinking though, so we're good.
And then my final thing from this week. So last week you mentioned how like people from TV shows, and I think you mentioned something about The Good Place, and there's like this kind of inside lingo or memes and language to the people who watch it among other people who watch it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, or you gave it a comparison to Seinfeld, and I was sitting in a meeting one day this week, and I'm sitting next to this woman, and I look over, and I was just like, man hands. So yeah, it was like one of those moments where you're like, yeah, if I said that to anyone, they know, but I don't want to embarrass her because like she has more masculine hands than I do. I was afraid to shake them. I mean, she's like, you know,
she'll crush you with your hands.
She probably would. Yeah, it would hurt. So the next segment you wanted to get into, you know, shifting gears, but hey, yeah. I knew I'd get bikes in here somehow. What we're watching, or what did you want to call it? What we're watching?
Yeah,
watching
so now? I think so. Now playing
is the
what I tried to throw out last week, but we didn't really discuss it. But to me, trailers are always about coming soon and what's up to come, what's yet to come.
Yeah, definitely.
And then as we progress and as the shows come out and as the movies get released and we see them, then we're in a now playing space. Even though we've already seen it or we've seen part of it, other people out there have a chance to see it. So I wanted to start a segment called Now Playing, where we just catch up and we kind of do a comparison of the trailers that we've reviewed specifically, and then anything novel we see in this space of the things that we've watched.
Yeah. If I could start, we didn't cover this movie, but last week, I think it was last Saturday night, so almost a week ago, we had a family movie night and we watched Moana.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, Disney movie. I thought it was really good. It was well done. You know, I think it's kind of like your typical Disney, like, songs. It reminded me a little bit of like Aladdin in a way.
Well, he's a trickster. Yeah. The genie and then the trickster, you know, I've been talking and writing about Joseph Campbell a lot, and the mythology of all peoples are very similar. They have these similar tropes and similar deities and very, like you said, that's a very...
And origin stories. And,
exactly.
And all that. Yeah. And I know you did do an article on our website comparing Moana to like business models and stuff. So that's why I wanted to bring it up and stuff, because we did watch the movie. And I mean, well done, you know, just a well done Disney movie. Kept everybody's interest. We devoured a ton of popcorn and the boys really enjoyed it. And, you know, Clarissa and I enjoyed it. So, but yeah, that was last week. And then this week, actually just a matter of like minutes ago, we finished the first episode of Maniac that we covered. Yeah.
So Maniac came out like last night or midnight or whatever Netflix decides is midnight for them.
Zulu time.
I saw it as I was going to sleep and I was like, ooh, I kind of want to see this. And I started to watch it.
Did you sacrifice sleep for Maniac?
And I could not put it down. I binged it more than I've binged anything.
How many episodes?
I got 5 episodes in. Got halfway through it.
So let me guess, you got to sleep about 3 a.m.
Well, I did. I watched. I could only get one in at work because of all the stopping and starting. So 4. Yeah. So about 2 a.m. and then watched one during the course of the day. But it's the most unsatisfying one where you have to stop and start at work while you're doing work. And you're like, oh, I missed something visually. Let me rewind that. So,
yeah. And my work blocks Netflix, so I can't watch that work. So. Yeah. So wait a minute. You said it was out at midnight, whatever Netflix thinks is midnight. And what time was that here? Or like in California time or Pacific time?
I don't know. I mean, it was already out by the time it's midnight here. So I'm sure it was out before midnight.
No. Okay. Let me rephrase that. What time did you start watching?
I started watching around midnight.
Oh, okay. And they're like 40 minutes, 41 minutes. So they're not like, it's right there. I mean, we watched one episode.
Oh, that was the first thing I saw when I saw it. I was like, ooh, Jimmy likes this runtime.
Well, the funny thing is we got the boys to bed and I looked at Clarissa. I'm like, hey, it's 41 minutes. Why not? let's do the first episode and then Ted and I can watch it. Did you get the feeling that it was like shot on an iPhone or something?
So no, I
very like, well, before you get into it.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is very like almost, like high frame rate and looks like a Mexican soap opera. Like as far as
super clean.
Right. Yeah. Super clean.
Yes. I didn't get that because I'm still a little put off. Well, I don't know. Not put off is not the right word. But after seeing Unsane last week and knowing what that fisheye, that super wide angle lens on something like an iPhone or something like that, I didn't get that. I got hung up in the world building that they were doing in Maniac, and especially in that first episode. What was like a key part for you? Because I'm trying not to do the spoilers because now I've seen 5 episodes. And
yeah, no, I don't want spoilers. I mean, it ended really when they got into their pods or whatever, and that's kind of where the first episode ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the first episode so far hasn't really sold me. Jonah Hill seems a little dull.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely intrigued. I want to watch more episodes. I'm not saying I don't want to watch more episodes. But the thing that I think, and I don't want to say turns me off, but the thing that, like, slows it down for me is Jonah Hill's melancholy performance of...
Yeah.
He's just too, like, it's almost not even depressed. I would say he's almost, like, too flat.
Well, he's definitely playing the straight man, and as it...
Where Emma Stone is, like, angry.
Who?
Wait, it's not Emma Stone.
Oh, you're right. Emma Stone. I didn't hear it. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Oh, Emma Stone. Man, you freaked me out. I was like, wait a minute. What did I get it wrong?
No. Emma Stone is like all over the place.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
Angry is a nice way to put it. And in the subsequent episodes, you'll see her point of view, her perspective. And it's kind of neat. You'll see that pre-testing space played out from her point of view. So you get a little more of a taste of her angle on it. And she's definitely the driver behind this. There's amazing storytelling, amazing world building. I mean, it's just, it completely throws you off of your game when it shows, what is it? The Statue of Many Liberties?
No, I thought it was like the Statue of National Liberty or something, or it was...
And it's like a Russia, it's one of those places that it's showing you a world that you're familiar with, but enough disjointedness to show you that it is not a contemporary world. And to me, that was awesome, just the world building.
Yeah, and it's like weirdly futuristic, right?
Yeah, it's more like a parallel universe where things develop differently. And like we, you know, if we had stayed on a space program, but then didn't develop personal computers.
I like that because I'm like, wait, they're very advanced in like...
It follows the whole idea of having a socialist, and it's funny to say socialist, maybe even a communist mentality, you know, where it's state first.
Right.
You know, and I think that's...
Well, you might be saying that because you're further ahead in the series than I am.
And sadly, I mean, like, no, I'm not. I can literally tell you that they throw you off of this game, and yet that is the least of your concerns. Each episode plays out as a vignette, just like we had, like I had anticipated or thought of, where they go into a recollection. And there's this great through line. No, I'm not saying there's not, but I'm just saying each episode has this highly stylized viewpoint, and it's just it plays out, and you know, I'm gonna butcher his name. Tell me.
I don't know, but are they different directors? Is that why it's stylized each episode?
No, it's not. It's all Corey.
Oh, okay.
Corey Fukunaga.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Corey Fukunaga, who is now, he has been dubbed the next director of the next James Bond movie. So I'm fully excited for that. I was joking about getting Matthew McConaughey to do a turn as Q, having an existential crisis the way he did in that True Detective.
Yeah.
But Corey Fukunaga is the director of all of these, and he just plays with genre, plays with these two actors, allows them to run through different scenarios. It's an amazing place and space to play. I heard an interview with Carlton Kuse, and last week we talked about Jack Ryan, and Carlton Kuse was the producer of that, and he was also the producer of Lost. And when he was producing that, he was talking about how great it was to have the time, the space, the freedom to do 8 episodes over the course of however many months he'd had, as opposed to their shooting schedule for like Lost, when they were doing Lost and they were shooting for the networks. And it was like, it's a shock to get that kind of freedom. And you know, Carrie's going from HBO to Netflix, so there's a little bit less of a shock, but he knows what he wants, he knows the boundaries he can push, he knew the budget that he had, so he was pushing the envelope on spending money smartly, on putting it into the sets and putting in the story and getting the actors and just doing an amazing job. So I you know, the setup in the first one, it really gets the ball rolling, and I didn't want it to stop, so that's one of the reasons I kept watching.
Well, you sold me. I guess you know, we'll watch episode 2 and 3 and we'll see where it goes.
Awesome.
So are you a Bond guy? I mean, you mentioned Bond. Are you a Bond guy?
I'm not a full Bond guy. I was a big fan of Pierce Brosnan. I like that Bond. I like the idea when Quentin Tarantino was trying to pitch socially what he wanted to do with Bond and kind of bring it back to a cloak and dagger, make it a little more bloody, a little less pristine. And I think Danny Boyle did that a little bit. I think Cary Fukunaga can do a little bit more with the characters, so that'll be interesting to me.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, I'm not really, you know, I mean, Bond is okay. I mean, I'm not saying I don't like it. I'll watch a Bond movie, but I'm not, like, a huge Bond fan. The main thing about it is I'm not really into, like, movie franchises all that much.
Yeah.
Even Star Wars and stuff, for example. You know, I mean, like, the first 2.5 were good, you know, but...
He lost you at Ewoks.
Yeah, it kind of lost me at the Ewoks, which, you know, I'll tolerate him. But no, I mean, like, you know, don't get me wrong. I still go to see the Star Wars movies and, like, I like Star Trek, you know, and I'll watch, you know, what is it, the odds or the evens? I always forget.
The evens.
Evens, yeah. The only way to know that is if you like the first one, then you like them all. If you didn't like the first one, it's the evens. No, so a quick aside. So, you know, I'm like, when did that come out? Like 80, like, or 79 or something, right?
Yeah, 78, 79.
Yeah, exactly. So my uncle, he worked for Paramount Studios his whole life, and he would always get, like, these releases, you know, and all these movies, like, right when they would come out in the theater, and he would have them at home. So we're sitting there, and we're like, oh, Star Trek, you know, we're all excited. My dad was there, and my cousin, and my uncle, and everybody's around, like, to watch Star Trek, right? And they're so excited. And so, like, like, ready to rock and roll over Star Trek. So Spock does that long spacewalk that where it puts everybody to sleep. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like struggling to stay awake. I'm like 9 years old or something, you know, or 8 years old, whatever. And I'm struggling to stay awake. And finally, I just sit up and I look at the sofa and there's everyone in the room is sleeping. It was hilarious. And I'm like, all right, I don't feel bad, man. I'm out. Boom. And I just, like, racked out, you know?
Uh-huh.
But yeah. So, I mean, franchise movies, meh, you know, I could watch them, but I can also leave them.
Yeah. It's a very interesting idea there that franchises are definitely an easy way for movie production company to know that they're going to make money. I guess it's a more of a sure thing. And I think that's what they like.
Oh, it's predictable. Sure.
It's predictable. And it's a sure thing for the audience too. The audience also has something invested in knowing what they're getting into. So I think it's very interesting to say that it seems like a lot more people are spoiling on the idea of franchises just for franchise sake. And I think that's what has happened with Star Wars right now. And I think there's, you know, people are pumping the brakes. So we'll see what the world has for, you know, like, it's so funny because Disney did both Star Wars and the Marvel Universe, and with such different results, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see how they're going to continue, because they're definitely going to keep making those movies. They own the franchises, so they're going to continue to make movies, but how they make them is going to be the important part.
Well, and I mean, this might be a little out of order than what we did with the show notes and how we have things set up, but should we just get into Captain Marvel since we're talking about franchises and
sure,
Marvel? So, I mean, yeah, you know, and then we can get into the other stuff. I mean, we were going to get into it, you know, a little bit later, but hey, let's jump into it.
Cool.
My first question. Now, yes. I am, you know, I refrained from doing research because I wanted this to be fresh. So I come in my ignorant comic book nerd self. I'm not really into comic books and I don't know much about it. I can assume Captain Marvel is the good looking space alien.
Yes.
Am I right?
You are correct.
Okay. So the second thing is the Marvel Universe and the Marvel comics from, like, the Waybacks when Marvel first started, is it all based on Captain Marvel? Is she, like, the original superhero or something?
This is my understanding, that Captain Marvel was originally a man, and that was all right. And it was owned by DC. Now, I might have to fact check this, but we'll see.
Corrections for next week.
we'll save it for corrections next week. But because it was named Captain Marvel, and this is the time before, you know, when all those boys were running around and just making up weird characters and weird named things, you know, to put into comic books.
Like Stan Lee and all this, you're talking.
Yeah. Kirby. Stan Lee, all those guys were just, like, competing. So Marvel, being Marvel, said, oh, well, we're going to have to buy Captain Marvel from you. So they bought Captain Marvel. They brought it over as a guy. And then eventually they changed it to a woman. And the Marvel Universe loved it. And she stuck. So I think it's not the basis, but it is one of the strongest, one of the most powerful characters within the Marvel Universe.
You know, and that's amazing, because, like, I don't think I've ever heard of Captain Marvel. So that's, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, if it's that strong of an anchor in the Marvel universe, why are they now bringing out Captain Marvel when you've had Iron Man for, like, how many movies now? Or you've had Captain America for, like, a few movies and, you know, the Avengers for all these movies. So is she not an Avenger?
I don't think she is, no.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
When you talk about the lineage of the comic books and stuff like that on the canon, you know, the original Avengers were Ant-Man and the Wasp. The Wasp was the one who named the Avengers the Avengers. So when Marvel decided they were going to make movies, they actually used Iron Man as a lesser liked character because there was a lot less to lose there. So they said, we'll take a well-known but not beloved. We aren't going to start with Captain America. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that was the initial intent, was let's start with Captain America. It's, you know, like a flagship character within the Marvel Universe. No. Let's use Iron Man and we'll break it in and we'll see how it does. And if it does well, then we can fold in these other characters. So that was where they started, and it paid off. Iron Man today is seen as one of the biggest characters, even though it wasn't, you know, it was more of a Black Sabbath song than it was a Marvel character. So everything's paid off for Marvel throughout the whole phase. You know, they're done in phases, and we're at the end. We're coming to the end of the first phase.
Yeah, and when you look at, like you mentioned, you know, they wanted to go with a lesser character and so on. But I mean, I think
they're playing it safe.
Yeah, and I think you have two things. You know, the one is the character itself, Iron Man or Captain America or whoever the character might be. And again, whether it's even DC or Marvel, I mean, Batman and Superman and, you know, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, all these, you know, all these franchise stories that you have. And then you have the other side of it, which is, you know, Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
So you're looking at Iron Man in this case, and Robert Downey Jr. is identified with Iron Man, where if you look at like a Batman or if you look at a Spider-Man, whether it's DC or Marvel, there's no one Spider-Man that is carried that franchise over the years.
Yeah, and then you juxtapose that with, you know, Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine, you know, it's like,
exactly.
He has been the Wolverine for, what, 20 years now, and every 2 to 3 movies, Spider-Man gets swapped out.
Exactly, yeah.
And then when Disney bought Marvel, there was existing deals where the Fantastic Four, all the mutants, and Spider-Man were all owned by other production companies, so they had to, like, not do productions with those characters. You know, Spider-Man and the mutants through the X-Men were always huge, huge characters, much bigger than the Avengers, you know, at the time.
Yeah,
so now the tables have really turned on that.
Yeah, and I remember being a kid, you know, and I had a friend who was into comic books, and this is like probably like mid-70s to mid-80s, let's say. So I'm probably like 6, 7, 8 years old up into about like, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, like that time span. And he would have these comics, and like I was clueless to these comics. And I mean, he had stacks and stacks of these comics of all of the characters that you see today. And I tried reading a few and I just couldn't buy into it because it was one of those things where it's not that I could buy in or I couldn't buy in, right? Like, you know, if you were like, I always loved Spider-Man. He was probably my favorite, like, superhero, if you want to, you know, call it a superhero. But he was, like, my favorite, I think, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I'd love those, like, I don't know what, like early 70s, late 60s cartoons that were just comic booky in the way they were designed. But what turned me off to like all the Marvel stuff and the whole Marvel universe and everything was just way too many characters and way too, like, it was like if you didn't keep up, you got lost really fast.
Yes.
Where I felt you could keep up with Spider-Man even if you missed an edition of a comic book or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
well, there's 8,000 characters in the Marvel Universe.
8,000.
8,000 characters. So it's very easy to get lost very quickly.
Wow. 8,000?
Yeah.
So when you say 8,000, I mean, that's like including like all the mutants, all the superheroes, yeah. all the anti-villains or villains, anti-heroes, whatever, like Venom and all that stuff?
Yes, characters. Yeah, just generally wow. the number of characters.
Well, no wonder I never got into it. I couldn't figure out which lineage to follow. But hey, getting back to Captain Marvel in the movie, because that's why we're yes. here.
And the trailer, yeah.
So Sam Jackson does my favorite thing when it comes to these movies. You know what that is?
What's that?
He starts off, he describes the movie and how ridiculous it is. Well, I was sitting there and there was like a big explosion and then there was like a crash car chase and then there was like, and he starts going into the whole, like he just starts describing how ridiculous this movie is going to be. And then he's like, but you're not from around here.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. He's picture perfect in it. He does his thing. They let him do his thing. And it's great. They've mastered the aging technology where they take 20 years off the character just by putting some dots in their face and putting a lot of cameras around them and stuff. So he can play a throwback, you know, character. What did you think about the blockbuster opening scene?
So, okay, let me back up just a second.
Yeah.
Can I guess the story?
Tell me the story.
Okay, the story's going to be, it's going to start with a space battle. This is my opinion. I mean, I have no insider knowledge.
Right.
It's going to start with a space battle of whatever Captain Marvel and those weird alien people that are chasing her or whatever are going to do. And her spaceship blows up like in near Earth orbit and she comes crashing in, but nobody's monitoring space, by the way, because they don't even see this coming, right?
Right.
So then she crashes into the blockbuster. And I was thinking about that, you know, getting to what you were asking, and it's like for nostalgic reasons. I mean, I don't know why, but it's like so the audience can ooh and ah and go, oh, I remember Blockbuster, hee hee hee.
Right.
You know, and all this stuff. And it's like, okay, I think they just put it in there for like nostalgic reasons to like
right.
to peg kind of the Gen X audience.
So it's very interesting you said that. So when you say Gen X, it's great. We watched this in rough cuts this week because it was a huge thing.
Okay.
Within 24 hours, it had over 100 million downloads.
109 million.
I want to say over because I forgot how much.
Yeah, it was 109 million.
109 million in 24 hours. And like we like to joke, I was only about, you know, 5% of that. But I watched it a lot. And then we went into a Rough Cuts meeting that day, that Tuesday, and we watched it.
Wait, the entire movie? You watched a lot or the trailer?
No, just the trailer.
Oh.
So we watched the trailer a lot that morning. Then we went into a Rough Cuts meeting and we watched it in the Rough Cuts meeting too with like, you know, 30 people in there. And in the meeting, there's...
Are you at liberty to define a Rough Cuts meeting?
Oh, do we have to do that? Okay, so...
Well, I don't know what that means.
So we're making a lot of promos for television and a bunch of creatives, programmers, schedulers, and production people are in the room to talk about the different cuts of promos that we're cutting together. So
okay.
For all the different shows that are on television, there's promos. Our group is called On Air Promotions and we make the promos. It's the more internal marketing.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we meet almost every day, 3-4 times a week to watch these rough cuts. And every now and then we'll throw a couple trailers in, and I guess they did the programming for this week because we watched Captain Marvel and we watched Mary Poppins Returns.
Gotcha. Yeah, which we'll get to in a little bit.
We'll get to that later. But so back to the blockbuster throw, the blockbuster nostalgic throw. So I had watched it many times and I thought, oh, it's great. You know, it's the throwback. It is putting it in a place in time in the past. And half the room was abuzz about it. And I heard someone say, oh, that's so crazy. So she crashed into the last blockbuster in existence. And I was like, oh no, you've missed the mark on like the millennial that knows that there's one blockbuster left open in Bend, Oregon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it missed the idea of nostalgia on someone that's a millennial that's on, you know, up hot on the news about knowing that there's one blockbuster left. They thought it was contemporary. They thought it was from this time. And it was just a happenstance that she crashed into the last blockbuster on Earth.
So was it supposed to be the last blockbuster in Bend, Oregon?
No, it's not. It's
oh,
it
okay.
It is both not the last blockbuster in Bend, Oregon, because I emailed the manager and I said, is this the big news that you couldn't tell me about? And she said, no, we were not involved in that at all. I really wanted to be, but we weren't. And then it was funny because my daughter is 12, Audrey's 12. And when she watched it later that day, she was feeling nostalgic and she remembers as, you know, as a 6-year-old or whatever, going to Blockbuster and,
oh, wow.
And getting a lot of movies because we did the, when Blockbuster was in its final throes of, you know, trying to not get toppled by Netflix, you could have a subscription where you could get them in the mail just like Netflix, but you could bring it into the Blockbuster store.
I remember that, yes.
And exchange it in the store. And then in the summertime, they had a better deal where you could have two movies out all the time. You have them out and you pay for a monthly subscription. And then you, as fast as you can watch them, you can bring them back and get a new movie. So we watched their whole library one summer for Audrey, and she was, you know, she would watch a movie, and if there's time, we could go get another one for tomorrow or another one for later tonight or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just the cutoff, she's 12, my son's 9, he has no recollection. He didn't watch anything from Blockbuster. He's all streaming all the time, you know, so
wow.
He has no nostalgic connection, and they're only 3 years apart.
He couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It meant nothing to him.
So, okay, getting back to the story at large.
Uh-huh.
So as she crashes into Blockbuster, which is kind of like Bryce, right? Like there's no recollection of a Blockbuster. Like the crash causes her to have amnesia, right?
Yeah.
So what she's looking for is clarification as the movie goes on of who she is, why she's there and all this stuff. Who's ever chasing her through space finds her on Earth, whatever that is, a war ensues, and, you know, they need to, like, she feels she needs to defend Earth before, like, some hostile takeover. Obviously, lots of explosions are going to happen. Car chases, apparently. And then she saves Earth by destroying Earth, and then the end is probably going to be her overlooking the devastation of what she saved in a panning camera scene or something. Like, that's my idea of what this movie's going to be. Like, she's just going to try and figure out, like, after the amnesia of the crash, who she is, why she's there, why she needs to save her. She probably doesn't even know. And then she's like, but I'm here for you. And there's this battle and everything blows up, but yet it all gets saved at the end. Typical Marvel.
Yeah, typical Marvel movie, you know exactly what's going to happen. Well, no, I think you know that she's going to live. We know that it's neat because it's a throwback within the Marvel universe.
Well, you define that? I don't know what that means because I'm not really like in the Marvel like fandom.
No, I'm merely speaking about the lineage of the films that have come out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
We're on the third movie of every single of one of the characters that we've been introduced to. Guardians of the Galaxy has two movies in. The third one's on the block. We don't know what's going to happen with that. Thor has three movies, you know. Iron Man has three movies, and Captain America has three movies, so...
And even Venom's coming out for Spider-Man, which could lead to more Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that's a different universe. I mean, it's a similar universe, but it's still...
Well, Spider-Man's Marvel.
Yeah, Spider-Man's Marvel. Okay, you're right.
But what you're saying is...
Spider-Man was in Civil War, and he was in the Avengers.
Yeah.
So Infinity War. But...
The Hulk.
The Hulk is in there, but the Hulk has never had great success. I think Thor Ragnarok was the best Hulk movie. But this is interesting because it's an introduction to a character in their first movie. So it's either this is going to be her first movie. She's going to play a big role in the second half of Infinity War. So I just think, to me, that's a thing that feels good. It feels good that she's, you know, a female character in this space and it can be her story. But then we also aren't going to focus on the fact that she's a woman.
Do you know the time when it changed from Captain Marvel being a man to a woman? Was it like in the 60s or something?
I do not know that.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool to know, but whatever. We could come back with that later in the show notes or something. But overall, I mean, I can assume you're going to watch this.
I'm definitely going to watch this.
Yeah, because you're like a Marvel guy.
I am. The family is. We're big fans. The kids are into it now. Yeah, we're sold.
You know, on Netflix, I see like Thor Ragnarok, and I haven't seen it, but, you know, I see like a lot of these streaming Marvel couple movies. And the thing that I wind up getting so like hung up on is an investment of time, right? You know, I mean, like, like with boys that get up like at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what time you go to bed, they're demanding of your time in the morning and all this stuff. And we get up early throughout the week and stuff. It's like my time is valuable and I can't put a lot of time into like watching stuff. So like you mentioned earlier, when you saw that Maniac was like 40 minutes and it was right in my wheelhouse, you're right, man. Like I'm going to watch all of them just because it's 40 minutes. Like they go to bed at, let's say they go to bed at 8. We're done at like, you know, 8:45, brushing teeth in bed by 9 and we're up early in the morning. You know, like it's so easy to do. Like how can you not? Whereas, you know, you start looking at these Marvel movies or you look at even, you know, the 1 hour, hour five Netflix and Amazon Prime streaming shows and such. You know, I mean, you're getting into those like places where like time is of the essence, you know? And then if and then if we do have time for like a 2 hour movie, it's almost like Moana, right? We watched Moana last week. Like now we're watching like with the boy, what a 3 and a 5 year old can tolerate, as opposed to, you know, Thor Ragnarok, where like, yeah, it's fantasy, but like a 3-year-old's gonna be like, what on earth is going on? You know, like the violence,
a little too much.
It's a little too much, exactly. So it, you know, and maybe it's that I'm not ever going to watch it, but it might be that I'm in a place in my life where right now is not the time to watch it, you know?
Right.
Where you have a 9-year-old, a 12-year-old, you're like 5 years ahead of me. You know what I mean? So like in 5 years, we could probably do those things.
So the middle of phase two, then you can start watching it with them and then start unfolding it back. You know, we just got over watching all most of the Transformers. We watched the first 4 Transformers. Now Bryce is really excited and he wants to start watching the Iron Mans and still on the fence about that. Cause the first Iron Man's kind of a gritty one, you know? And I think that's a big thing.
Yeah. And the first Iron Man, which one was that? I can't remember.
That's the one where he has the heart transplant in the cave and stuff. And he's building all the different Iron Man suits.
Oh yeah. 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 And then, who's the character with the whip?
Whiplash, right? No, is that his name? No.
Yeah, but who's the guy that played him? He was in 9 and a half weeks.
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke, yeah. I pull out the sexy movie. I like sex. It's nice. So overall, though, I mean, like you said, you're going to watch it. I'm probably not going to watch it anytime soon. I'm not saying never, but I'm not going to watch it at the theater. And I'm not, well, okay, yes, I am one of the 109 million because you forced me into it for this podcast. But, yeah, you know, I mean, like, whatever. It is what
not,
it is.
Not your cup of tea. It's okay to say that.
No, you know, the thing is, like, here's the funny side of it, though. Like, if I were single and I had all the time in the world to do, like, nothing but, like guy stuff, like, I'd probably be into it, you know? But, like, I'm a family man, you know? And,
right.
And, like, I gotta, like, get up early for work and I wanna do other things. It's just, I'm not into it right now.
Right.
Like, I'm patient. Anyway, so any last comments on Captain Marvel before we move on?
I love the cards in this one. When at the end it says, what makes her a hero?
Okay.
And it's kind of, it's a play on the words. The word her shows up first, and then it reveals the A and the O to become a hero.
Oh, I gotcha, yeah.
So it makes her a hero. But I took it as a Rorschach test or, you know, whatever you want to put into it. I thought it could mean, if you're thinking about it negatively, it means the fact that they're burying the fact that she's a woman. But then on the positive side, if you're not emphasizing the fact that she's a woman and she's doing womanly things, then she's just a badass in this space. You know, it's like when Gal Gadot comes on the screen, she is Wonder Woman. You know, it is front and center and she's an amazing, amazingly beautiful woman.
You know?
And there's no hiding it. But with Captain Marvel, she's just a badass and it could be anybody under the helmet, you know, or in that suit.
Yeah, but she's still good looking though. Come on.
She's incredibly attractive.
Yeah.
But I think they don't put her in a bustier, you know?
Well, sure. Yeah. Here's the funny thing though. So, and this is my final comment of it, which is more a comment of women in leader roles than, you know, I guess it's kind of what we're talking about. But so there was a podcast I was listening to, and I really got to like jot down notes. But it's hard when I'm riding my bike to work listening to a podcast, and somebody says some profound statement, and like I'm flying downhill at 30 miles an hour. Like, I don't know what to do at that point, but it's other than remember what they said, but I don't remember the podcast. Anyway, so what they were talking about was women in leadership roles in movies and in politics and all this stuff, and but mostly in movies though, because that's where, you know, there's a lot of like capitalism and money made, let's say.
Right.
And you get women in these roles, and there was a time when there were not enough women in like a leadership kind of role, like a Captain Marvel role, whereas they would be more in a supporting role in like the sexy, like, I don't know, what would you even call it? Like the supporting actress, eye candy, yeah, kind of a role, you know, that just is there to like get the guys all hot and bothered or something, you know?
Yeah, Black Widow.
Yeah, Black Widow, right. But anyway, so now they shifted over to having women in these leader roles and women in these like dominant roles. And this was a woman in this podcast, and she was like a guest on this podcast I was listening to. And what she was saying was that her idea of doing all that is still exploiting women, because now, rather than having women just looking good to get people into the box office, now they're selling women to get people into the box office, because women are in these roles because now they've been excluded from these roles for so long that it was like becoming offensive, let's say. And now they're in these roles to where they're the main characters. And in order to be the main characters, they still need to be good looking. They still need to have that attractiveness, you know, as the way we see in Captain Marvel, to bring like the people who are in the tops of the executive offices, the money and all this stuff. And they're just using them as now the tools to get them in, you know? I don't know. Maybe there's something there.
Yeah, and to me it makes I'm a big believer in that, and that's why I figure, to me, the most important thing is who's directing it, who's producing it, who's, you know, at the production company, you know what I mean? And
it runs deeper than who the main character is.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a superficial argument to say this character is a woman and she needs to be beautiful, you know, she needs to be.
And that was the argument that was being made, because they didn't get into that deeper, like, who's in the back office kind of thing. In the sense of the production company.
Yeah. Anna Boden, this is co-produced by a couple. So it has a woman as a co-director of Captain Marvel, which is great. You know, Black Panther was great in its diversity, you know, to have Ryan Coogler, you know, directing that, you know, off of Creed and off of all of Fruitvale Station, you know, like he has a grit, he has the street cred, he has the credibility for taking on this space, and he uses a female cinematographer. So it's like, it's amazing that women are in these roles, and they just need to have better pools of apprenticeships under them to draw from. And I think that's, you know, when I talk to the high executives, they complain that they can't hire enough women because there's not enough women below them. And I said, well, guess what? That's your fault too, because you're not hiring just the executives. You're not just hiring the C-levels and all the vice presidents. You're also hiring the managers and promoting the people. So it's basically, you can't complain that there's not enough talent at the high levels because the mid-levels are all men, because you're populating those pools with men by doing whatever it is you're doing as a high executive. So, you know, I don't buy that. So you have to seed all levels of all industries with women and people of color and everything. And then eventually it'll feel like it's evening it out.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I mean, I think the argument that I was listening to was a little bit shallow, because they were just targeting the primary and main actors and characters in these stories rather than digging deep into who's actually doing the writing and the directing and the production. producing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think what you're saying too also gets into like society at large. It's not just about the entertainment industry.
Right.
You know, when you look at, you know, I work in education, and when you look at my field and why you have, I mean, even a disproportionate number of females sometimes that get into teaching, but then what winds up happening is you have a disproportionate number of males maybe in the district office and as administrators, you know? And it's
right.
Like, well, how does that happen? When you have so many women in the teaching profession, but so few women in the administrative offices and so on, you know? And it's like, I mean, and it could be different district by district. I mean, obviously, but you know, it's just, it calls into question, like, what are those apprenticeship roles in not just the movie industry, but all industries, you know?
Right.
And even like you said, not just women, but, you know, people of color of all like races and genders and all the whatever it is, you know?
Right.
So anyway, I think we beat Captain Marvel up. Should
yep.
we move on?
Let's move on.
All right.
Now I'm taking your lead. We'll which way are you going with it now?
How about Stan and Ali?
All right.
Yeah. I say Ali like it's Muhammad
Ali.
Yeah,
we're doing Muhammad Ali. Is it a boxing movie?
No, Laurel and Hardy, right?
Yes.
But yeah, are you a Laurel and Hardy fan?
I'm not a huge Laurel and Hardy fan. I'm a John C. Reilly fan.
How about a Steve Coogan fan?
Ann and I like Steve Coogan.
Yeah. You know, I've always been an Abbott and Costello fan.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's see. Now, we have on our team, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out, the guy's name. That's what I want to find out, the guy's name.
I'm telling you, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Now, Abbott, you going to be the manager of the baseball team?
Yes.
You know the guy's names?
Well, I should.
Well, now you tell me the guy's names on the baseball team.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
You ain't saying nothing to me yet. Go ahead and tell me.
I'm telling him.
You ain't saying nothing yet. Go ahead and tell me.
Who's on first, what's on second, I don't know is on third.
You know the guy's names on the baseball team?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me for? I don't know.
A
little who's on first?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Abbott. But no, I think Abbott and Costello was a little more contemporary. They were a little more, I don't know, like polished, you know, and with their movies, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, Abbott and Costello meet the Invisible Man. They had all these movies, you know, where like Laurel and Hardy were more like, I don't know, what, 1920s, you know, like vaudeville.
Vaudeville, yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? Initial impression.
So to me, the initial impression is like we did in like Flynn, you know, it kind of hit me in that same space where, again, there's nostalgia for 20 years ago, and then there's nostalgia for 100 years ago.
Sure.
And to have, you know, John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan, I mean, they're fairly big names, I would say. This doesn't feel like a big movie. It feels like a smaller art house movie. But you could tell that it has, you know, the height of production value. It's put together very professional A-lister space. So I like the way it plays out. It has a lot of heart, you know, more heart than the John C. Reilly, Will Ferrell movies, you know. But, you know, it really, again, another story of friendship that just goes deeper than anything, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of strikes me as, you know, the Trailer Junkies, you know, Ted and Jim. Jim and Ted, whichever way you want to go. No, you know, I think the thing about it, though, is movies directed towards the baby boomers, I have a feeling, because it's like what they maybe grew up with and what their parents grew up with, like our grandparents.
Uh-huh.
You know, millennials and stuff, I don't know. Like, are they even connected to Laurel and Hardy?
Probably not. I mean, do you think that's why they went with Stan and Ollie? To kind of give you a little more separation?
I don't know. I mean, you know, the thing about it, though, is what I like about the way this is designed and set up. It's more about their off-camera friendship and turmoil than it is it is with their, like, public life. Because, I mean, nowadays, there's so many tabloids and social media. Like, we know everything, but we know a lot about celebrities. Where back then, like, we knew what was released or what you saw on on film.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like...
No hiding it.
If it was Stan and Ali today, we would know everything about them and their turmoil and where they're traveling and the shows they're doing and what's going on backstage and selfies and Instagram. And like, there'd be no movie to make because we would already know it, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It seems cool. I mean, I like the idea. I like the story. This is one I'd probably watch on streaming for sure. I'm not going to see it in the theater.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like, this is one of those movies where, you know, you're going to see it on Netflix and it's like, hey, you know what?
Let's watch it.
Yeah. Laurel and Hardy. Why not? You know, these are the guys. They're like some of the, like the, what would you call it? Like the godfathers of modern comedy.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting to have them struggle, you know, when they're such a, you know, vaudeville's just really about hijinks, comedy, and just always being on. And like you said, this is the parts where they're not always on, but they, you know, they continue to have their moments where they're the private moments of humor between them. But then there's a truth that they're speaking to one another and to their other loved ones. And it's really nice, you know?
Yeah, they're like the kings of improv. And the story is around what goes on when they're not doing improv.
Yeah.
So I think that's cool.
So are you using this to tell me that you've done a bicycle podcast without me? And then we're going to go through a rocky patch like Stan and Ali.
Dude, I love that. No, but maybe I'll use this as a tool in the future. You know, I'll be. Yeah, you got me laughing. No, I'll tell all my guests on my bicycle podcast. Yeah, you know, I do this other thing, but just don't tell Ted. You know? All right. So, I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, I'll probably see this one on streaming. I don't think I would see this in the theater, but what's your look? What's your take and look on the future of Ted family Sanus for this one?
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is something that if we stumble upon it, we might see it. I don't see us venturing out to Redbox to get this one.
So it's not something that you would do with intent and purpose. You right. would just like bump into a Redbox machine, goes, whoa. And like it falls out and you're like, well, we may as well watch it now.
It would have to be streaming and the kids would have to say they don't want to watch Black Panther again.
Gotcha.
Because literally the other night they were like, let's just watch Black Panther again. And I was like, all right, get it while it's on Netflix.
Wait, so when they're like 9 and 12, they act like they're 3 and 5? Watching things over and over and over and over.
Well, not that many times, but they know Netflix is going to lose all the Disney content. So they do have that sense of urgency with Disney content on Netflix.
All right. Well, maybe I should start watching some Disney stuff now. All right. Mary Poppins. Speaking of Disney.
Mary Poppins.
Yeah. I love our transitions this week, man. Well done.
Good job. Yeah. That was all you.
Yeah.
So this is Mary Poppins Returns. We have Emily Blunt. And like I said, we're in the Rough Cuts meeting. And I tested this joke with them first. And after we watched the whole trailer, I said to the room of 40 people, I said, I don't believe Emily Blunt's accent in this. What do you think about that?
You know, I don't. Yeah, it's a little too British. And then Penis Von Lesbian, he does make a cameo.
What? Who?
Penis Von Lesbian.
I don't know who that is.
Dick Van Dyke.
Oh.
Come on, I had to explain it? Ah, you killed me. But yeah, he makes a cameo. So he does this song and dance in the trailer.
Yes.
I'm assuming it's a cameo. What would you say?
Yes, well, he actually played that role in the original Mary Poppins under a lot of...
No, I know.
Under a lot of makeup. So now he just needs less makeup because he's older.
Oh, I gotcha.
And he does a little song and dance. And yeah, no, it's great. I think it's got nostalgia. It's got Rob Marshall at the helm. So, you know, you're going to have like a Chicago kind of feel. You're going to have that the big numbers are going to get pulled off with the quality and style.
Well, you see it in the trailer.
To me, I wasn't really sold on the trailer. Nothing really excited me about it until she spun the bowl and the animation kicked in. To me, that's the penguin stuff in the original Mary Poppins, and then this where they kind of plaster that on, and it's a mix of 2D animation that's like superimposed on top of it, as well as some really cool special effects. I really like that part of it. Yeah, the first half of this trailer didn't really do anything for me. I don't like the kids grown up.
And I agree with you with spinning the bowl, and then you have the 2D animation and the cartoon looking, I don't know, like almost colored pencil look, as opposed to the 3D animation, like you get like a Finding Nemo kind of a movie or something.
Yeah, right.
And what I like about it is, like, we see so much of, you know, the modern day 3D animation, computer generated graphic type stuff, and it's almost like relieving getting back to a cartoon again.
Right.
You know? The other side of it, though, that I think I'm gonna struggle with this movie is, I mean, I'll probably watch it because, you know, I have little boys and, you know, I have a wife who loves these kind of movies. But the thing that I'm going to struggle with, and that's going to totally annoy Clarissa, is that whenever we watch anything like this,
uh-huh,
what I do over and over and over again is sit there, right? What'd he say? What'd he say? I missed that one. What'd he say? You know, because I don't get that British accent, man.
Really?
I can't understand him.
It's on a register that you can't really focus in on?
It's like, you know, it's like, okay, as one who like tests people for like learning disabilities, you know?
Yes.
And there's like a figure ground, like an auditory figure ground thing. So meaning like if there's like volume and like conversation going on, but there's like all this background noise that interferes with what's going on. Right. Well, where my disability lies is like in accents and stuff. Like they could speak, you know, when's the last time you understood somebody who spoke Scottish?
Heed, paper, no! Move that melon of yours and get the paper if you can. Hauling that gargantuan cranium about. I'm not kidding. That boy's head's like Sputnik. Spherical, but quick pointy in parts.
Right? It's English, but man, it's Scottish if you ask me. Like, you can't understand them. And that's kind of where I am with this. Like, I don't know. And then, when was the original one? Like, in the 60s?
Oh, God. We're so bad at this.
Yeah, well, whatever. We'll just say in the 60s. But you know what the most amazing thing, though, honestly?
What's that?
So, So I'm doing my show notes, and I type in, you know, I do my show notes in Microsoft Word, and I'm typing into Word, superfragilisticexpialidocious, right? And
yeah, yeah.
Of course, I misspell it because, like, I don't know how to spell that. You know, Microsoft picks up on it, puts a little, like, red squiggly line underneath.
Uh-huh.
I right-click, and sure enough, there is the correct...
You got it close enough.
The correct spelling that gets it close enough. Like, I was like, there's no way that... I couldn't believe it, man. So...
There you go.
Just for my show notes, it's spell corrected.
So, 1964 was Boom. The original Mary Poppins. Yeah, I think... Here's an interesting thing. Now let's take Stan and Ollie and compare it with this movie. This movie has these actors, you know, Lin-Manuel's an Academy Award winning, Meryl Streep's Academy Award winning, but none of their title cards say Academy Award winner, you know, Academy Award winner.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a huge movie and everybody knows it. So they don't have to put that extra bit of salesiness in it. And yet Stan and Ollie have two Academy Award nominees, and yet they're selling Coogan and John C. Reilly as Academy Award nominees. So it's like, to me, that's interesting that the smaller movie is trying to up its cred by throwing Academy Award nominee as, you know, on top of the titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this one doesn't have to do that. So, you know, we already know who these actors are and when they've won so many, you know, Academy Awards or Academy Awards for different things, they don't have to say it.
So here's the thing, you know, I have one question about like CGI and stuff for Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
So Penis Von Lesbian is 92 years old, right? Do you think his like head is CGI'd over like a stunt double, or is he actually doing that dancing?
Oh no, I think I would I hope not. I hope it's him doing the dancing.
I hope it is too, because if he's doing that dancing at 92 years old, there's hope. You know? I mean, man, that guy is like fit, man.
No, it's great.
Yeah. Good old Dick Van Dyke. All right. So any last thoughts of Mary Poppins?
No. You?
Yeah, mostly that I think Clarissa and her mom is really going to enjoy this. I don't know if the boys will that much because it's like there's too much like adult acting. And then, I'll tolerate it. Like, I like, this reminds me of The Hills Are Alive with the Sounds of Griswold.
Oh, yeah. Sound of Music.
Sound of Music, yeah. No, it kind of reminds me of The Sound of Music, right? So if you think about The Sound of Music, like, I'm not really, like, into these kind of movies, but The Sound of Music is a great movie. I mean, like, I remember we got Barbara, and Barbara's my mother-in-law, but we got Barbara for her, like, I don't know, what was it, 70th birthday, maybe? We got her, like, The Sound of Music, not just box set, but it, like, had all this, like, extra stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we have that, too. We have that huge collector's edition of Sound of Music.
Yeah, exactly.
It comes with like the soundtrack and like BTS stuff, behind the scenes stuff. And
yeah. And Clarissa goes to the Hollywood Bowl like every other year with her mom to go like singing along with the Sound of Music thing. And they sit there and like the whole Hollywood Bowl is singing along to the Sound of Music. And I'm like, 1 year I gotta go so I can be as like flamboyant as I wanna be. You know, so I could go just sing along with the Sound of Music. Anyway, how about we take a break, man? I mean,
all right.
I got a 30. Oh my God, I'm like halfway through.
You're halfway there? Okay.
Well, good. I'm heading towards the rocky shores. Yeah, there's a shipwreck on the horizon and I don't see the lighthouse. So let's go take a break and then we'll finish up with the chilling adventures of Sabrina.
There we go.
All right, I'll be back.
Okay.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it.
All right, if anybody says we're bullshitting during our breaks, no way, man. Take care of business. Okay. All right, and we're back. Man, all this beer. Whew. All right. Is it just Chilling Adventures of Sabrina?
I thought it's The Chilling. It says Chilling Adventures, so there is.
Yeah, well, however I typed it is how it is, because I never make a mistake. Yeah, right. So getting into this one, I didn't know, and maybe I'm not, I did a little bit of research and stuff, but I couldn't really tell. Is this from a comic book series?
It is.
It is. So, okay, so I am right with that.
So I don't know if you were familiar with the 1990s show Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that is the same Sabrina, but this is a completely different take on the character. I've talked about Riverdale before, but I don't think you've seen it, right?
Riverdale. No, I haven't seen it, but I've seen River Dance.
So Riverdale is a huge movement, a great new show on Archie, the Archie comic book. And from the same...
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
From the same Archie comic book universe, Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, is in that same vein, in that same line. So she's like a spin-off character from Archie. But you wouldn't know it from the Melissa Joan Hart Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, because it was done in a very 80s, 90s style, you know? So this is produced by the same production company as Riverdale. So it has the darkness of Riverdale and like kind of that moody, new...
I would almost say satanic.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like it has the beginnings, like Riverdale's much lighter than this. And like you said, this hits you straight over the head with the goat demons and the devil and who knows what else. So...
Oh, pentagrams
Yeah, very deeply, deeply in witchcraft, but in a witchcraft closer to American Horror Story than even, you know, Sabrina the Teenage Witch or some other kind of witch. Apparently, this was in production over at the CW or over at Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers ended up might have ended up doing it, but they didn't want to do Charmed and Sabrina the Teenage Witch at the same time because they have a reboot of Charmed coming out. So they put this on the back burner. The producers pitches for Riverdale, shopped it around and got it sold to Netflix. And I would be interested to hear if it got darker going to Netflix, because you could go darker than CW in the Netflix space, and Netflix is looking to round out its offerings and always looking to push the envelope, I think, as far as what it has in content. So
yeah, and it's kind of bizarre too, because they start off with like the Marilyn Monroe, like happy birthday when she's singing to Jack Kennedy.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if like it's a dead Marilyn Monroe or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then it's bizarre too, as you watch it go through, you see like obviously a good looking blonde woman. And then she's like off in the woods in like this almost, I don't know if it is or if it's close. Well, it's probably close. The same outfit that Marilyn Monroe's wearing in the 7 Year Itch, you know, the same like white dress.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I, for whatever the reason, I picked up on this whole Marilyn Monroe, like theme vibe going on or vibe in the trailer.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. It's, you know, it's coming out October 26th on Netflix. We're recording this on September 21st. You know, the trailer drops September 13th. It's about a month and 2 weeks out, and it's only the teaser trailer. So Netflix is really compressed all of their marketing and all of their pre-street stuff to about a month. So I bet the first trailer for this actually drops in the, you know, a couple of weeks. But I love the idea of compressing that timeline of looking forward to something. I feel like, you know, we just did Maniac how many weeks ago? not that many weeks ago, right?
Well, and that brings up a couple of points I wanted to talk about too. And Anne mentioned that when movies have this long tail of, or maybe not even a tail, but like
long lead time. Yeah.
A long lead time. Yeah. They come out and it's like the longer it is, the less successful they're expecting their product to be.
Right.
And it seems like lately we've been doing a lot of trailers where it's like we do the trailer, 4 weeks later, the whole thing drops. And then right. All of a sudden, like, you know, like you said, Maniac, like I feel like we just covered it. Now we're watching it and reviewing it, you know, and what do you think from a marketing side of, I don't know, trailers and movies and just the industry, why some are going so short? I mean, they're going like another one that's really short is The Favorite. That one's, you know, we covered that a few weeks ago, and that's ready to drop here any minute. And, you know, you're looking at only a couple of weeks. And I mean, there's so many of these movies and series that are coming out rapidly or quickly right after their trailer release, whereas others are like 9 months lead time.
Yeah, you're playing right into my discussion tomorrow. I'm going to be on the panel tomorrow at CSUN.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you reminded me, because I am definitely... And remind us again, what time, and is it live streamed?
It's 3:00 and they are not live streaming it, but they're working on clearing the live stream for it next year. Some of the panelists are concerned about sharing, but you know, we have a podcast, so I share every week. So I'm very used to putting my stuff out there.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, we have no cloak.
So what you're saying is like the marketing, what is this doing to the marketing? What is it doing to this space? I think my biggest takeaway was when you're tied to 52 weeks a year for the theatrical releases and you're tied to prime time, you know, episodic television in, you know, on 3 networks or 100 networks, you're still tied to a finite space and time for placement. So now that Netflix and streaming services have taken off the shackles of time and space, where all of this exists in one bucket that anyone can go dive into and pull out whatever it is they want, then the lead times for this are just going to get shorter. And I think a month feels about right, you know, like shorter than that feels like they're springing stuff on you. And maybe you don't want to have a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff that's just sprung on you. But I did notice, and maybe because I'm into Maniac, back. I don't know if you looked anywhere online, but it felt like every page that I went to was showing me advertisement for Maniac, you know, whether it was IMDb, was, you know, had the banner stuff that was all around. And
kind of like how they did with Jack Ryan a couple weeks ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we're moving into a space where, yeah, we're going to get the trailer. It's going to be a month out. And then the minute that something's available, because we always talk about how streaming is such a low bar of entry, but because it's always going to be there, they need to put extra emphasis that you can get this right now. Like, you need to go right now and get this, because everybody else is going to be talking about it, and we're going to tell everybody about it, and it's going to be water cooler stuff, so you want to be caught up for your podcast or your water cooler next week, and you don't want to be behind.
Yeah. No, and that makes total sense with when you look at how things are being released and the time frame they're being released, and when the episodes are being released, because people just want to talk about what they enjoy, what they want to see.
Right.
You know, and like you said, that water cooler chat. Like, I want to walk up, hey, what are you guys watching on Netflix? This is what I'm watching. Hey, did you see that trailer? Yeah, I saw that trailer the other night. It's dropping in 3 weeks. You know, like, they don't want to wait 9 months because you're going to lose your audience.
Right.
Like, I think, you know, and I think that plays right into a streaming audience, right? So if you look at going to theater and it's something like a Star Wars, it's a franchise movie like we talked about earlier tonight.
Yeah.
Something like a Star Wars, your fans are there. You're not going to lose them, you know? But when you look at a streaming audience and a streaming show or streaming movies, people hear about it. They want to watch it like yesterday, you know?
Yeah. No, it's crazy.
Yeah. They want to watch it now. Like, no one has the patience for anything. And, you know, 1 month is a long enough lead time to play it out on a platform like Netflix or Amazon Prime or something. And once it gets played out, like, if it's longer than a month, like, people are going to start dropping off and they're going to forget about you.
Right.
And I think that's what happens with, like, blogs and, you know, like, photography things on Instagram and even our podcast, right?
Yeah.
If we're not consistent, and if a content provider and a creator isn't consistent week in, week out, day in, day out sometimes, like, it could be days and people forget about you. And I think that's where, like, these spaces are getting to. They're dumping millions of dollars into the production, and they want to get the most viewers possible as quickly as possible. So let's let them know a couple weeks ahead of time, and then bam, drop it on them. And they're right. And the audience is right there, you know?
Yeah, I think the pre-air, the coming soon is more of a passe thing where nobody has to plan anymore. They just need to know, is it available? If it's available, great. Then we'll go and we'll seek it out, or we'll go and we'll look for it, or we'll click here and then get straight to it, you know?
Yeah. So I don't know. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Are you going to watch?
I'm a huge Riverdale fan, so I will definitely be watching this.
I don't know. I mean, I might. I'll show Clarissa. Oh, here's a funny aside. So we're sitting there, and I'm sitting in the room, you know, at the computer by myself, and I figure, okay, I'm going to go scroll through all the trailers Ted sends me for the week, because as I mentioned before, like, Ted, like, sets up everything we do, and I'm watching, and Clarissa walks up, she goes, you got boys behind you, they're watching, you know. And again, they're 3 years old and 5 years old, right? And I look behind and they're like mesmerized. Like, I mean, like buttercup eyes. I mean, like, their eyes are like, you know, buttons. I mean, they're huge and they're looking like, what in the world? So I turn it off. You know, I'm like, all right, you guys don't need to be watching this, because, like, they snuck up on me from behind.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, the occult and, like, satanic kind of things, I kind of scoff at a little bit.
Right.
Because, like, you know, I can do zombies, and I can do, like, people running after me in my dreams trying to, like, hack me to pieces and stuff, you know, like slasher type stuff. And, like, I'm okay with that. But, like, when you bring in, like, goat heads and, like, weird, like, satanic, like, ritual stuff, like, yeah, I'm not going to sleep easy that night, you know? I don't And I don't know what the difference is, because like someone's chasing you to kill you. Like, that doesn't bother me. I can sleep through that, you know?
But, yeah.
But like, so going back to the first season of True Detective with the satanic kind of tattoos that they left on the dead body and all that stuff.
Right, right.
It got a little bit creepy, but like, I think they staved it off enough to not like offend the audience, you know?
Where do you fall on serial killers?
I've never seen serial killers.
No, I mean, just in general, as a genre.
Oh, I thought that was like a
new show.
A new show, Serial Killers. You know, it probably is.
Coming to Hulu.
Yeah, right. It probably is somewhere. No, I mean, like, if it's something, you know, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. You know, we were already covering, you know, or like, we've watched Dexter, you know, and
yeah.
Dexter's like the serial killer who kills serial killers, you know, and...
The serial killer with the heart of gold.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I like that. No, and we've watched Silence of the Lambs and stuff, and like, you have a crazy serial killer wearing like a skin outfit or something of these women that he...
Buffalo Bill, come on.
Buffalo Bill, right. I mean, that stuff doesn't really bother me because, like, I don't know, maybe because I watch the news sometimes, you know, and like, that's just on the news. But like, if it were like a serial killer who engaged in serial killer crimes through satanic rituals and that would freak me out. Or if somebody took like a zombie movie and made zombies through a satanic ritual and not because of a zombie virus, like that would freak me out, you know?
So like Suspiria or something.
That sounds familiar. What is that?
We did that movie. It's the movie with the crazy dancing and the kind of satanic dancing.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That's creepy. Yeah. It's like in France or it's like in Paris or something. Yeah, no, that one was creepy. You know, like, yeah, that stuff, like, I don't get into, like, that like, mind F stuff. I mean, I don't want to make this explicit, but, like, yeah, Suspiria, with the
big sigh, the big hook.
The hook trembling on the desk, you know, yes, like, oh, yeah. That just creeps me out, man. I can't handle that stuff. You know, you could, Freddy Krueger and stuff like that, you know, like, that doesn't bother me at all, you know, that Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff, meh.
Well, that's not real, right? I mean, there's no reality to that.
Exactly. It's like, meh, some burned guy in a sweater, eh, you know, whatever. But, like, when you bring in like that mind, like, you know, I don't know, just like creepy, like satanic stuff, like, oh man, it just I get the spine quivers, you know. Anyway, man, what do you say we wrap it up? And
all right,
I saw you take a last swill of the beer. How did it finish?
It finished nice. It was smooth all the way through. Like I said, this is like a great baseline beer, the lightest beer I can enjoy.
Great. So no wet panty flavor.
No, sir.
All right. Yeah. No, I'm still sipping on, you know, mine, like 32 ounces. That was a lot of beer to suck down at 9.25%. Yeah, I'm on my way to being shipwrecked. I mean, oh, God. I'm looking at you on the computer screen and like, it keeps spinning around, you know, but like my notes are hard to focus on, but hey, why not? It's Friday night. And
there you go.
Yeah. And so you're going to the ball game tomorrow night.
So right after my panel discussion about the future of marketing in the media space, we're going to go over to the Dodgers Padres game.
All right, Ted, man. Hey, I had a good time tonight, man. We probably went like way longer than we normally should have, but hey, that's all right.
Have a great night.
Yeah, you too, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right. See you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.